ஓம் அஜ்ஞானதிமிரந்தஸ்ய ஜனஞ்சனசலக்கய சக்ஷுருன்மீலிதம் யேன தஸ்மை ஸ்ரீ குரவே நமஹ. நம ஓம் விஷ்ணு பதாய கிருஷ்ணா பிரஸ்தாய பூத்தலே ஸ்ரீமதே பக்தி வேதாந்த சுவாமினிதி நமினே. நமஸ்தே சரஸ்வதி தேவே கௌரவாணி பிரச்சாரிணே நிர்விசேஷ சூன்யவாதி பஷ்சதி ஆதேசதாரிணே. ஹரே கிருஷ்ணா. தேங்க் யூ வெரி மச் எவ்ரி ஒன் ஃபார் காமிங் அகேன் or for the first time, those of you who come for the first time, to this second session on this presentation related to Vaishnava Sannyasis in modernity, their lives and challenges. What we will do, we will quickly recap, very quickly, we will see what we discussed yesterday. Then we will read one singam one time and read from Bhagavad Gita chapter 18 text 5 something that Lord Krishna says which is relevant to our topic and to Srila Prabhupada's view on the sannyasa ashram, and then we will start from the second part of the study related to the historical evolution of sannyas according to the information we have from the classical period until its present expression in ISKCON. So then the presentation we will do, let's set up a time where we decide if we take comments and questions or we go ahead. I will give you the choice. I think for the first part it's good if you have comments or questions, unless I ask your input, please take a note. The reason usually I will take more input, but because there is so much information to present, which may be relevant, I think is relevant for you can make a note and then we will have time for discussion in the second part of the presentation. Is that okay? So this were the five sections of the study on sannyas. I have one already, please give some. So these are the five sections of the study, and yesterday we mainly focus on the introduction and the foundational elements of the study, particularly what were the considerations that took me to start to develop that, to choose this subject and to conduct the study, and then also what were the methods used, the design of the research design, how it was organized, and some general information about sannyas. We did discuss how when we examined any aspects in the field of religious studies, there are always two main considerations. One is the popular practice and the textual traditions. So what's written in the sacred texts, but also how people express them. And they may match or not match. Sometimes they go together. Many times there are differences between the two, what's written and what people do. And we discussed some examples of that within ISKCON today. And then we look also, and this was actually, we did have some discussions on these six general observe what people do. And we discussed some examples of that within ISKCON today. And then that these six phenomena are taking place. There are changes of the practical expressions of the sannyas ashram due to the influence of modernity or the past of time. There is a consistent, or there seems to be a consistent process of domestication, of renunciation, and becoming modern. So it's a domestication in the beginning that is going from a more secluded, we could say wilder in the good sense of the term, lifestyle in the forest to a more a situation more domestic in living with other members, other renouncers in an ashram setting, the mat system, and having a more, we could say, somewhat civilized a lifestyle. This will be one way of expressing it. That's not to say that the ancient sannyasis were not civilized. They were actually the leaders of the Varnashram society, but not in the way we will understand in present days. So that's why I'm using the term. Then also something very clear is that sannyas has been used at least since the medieval times as a very, we could say, powerful platform to communicate spiritual messages and for Vaishnavas to refute doctrines which oppose the Vaishnava Siddhanta or the position, the supreme position of the Lord, of Krishna or Vishnu. Another element very important is that real renunciation is not external, it's an internal process. And this was expressed within our Sampradaya by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his disciples. Srila Rupa Goswami elaborated on it in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu on the principle of Yukta Vairagya or applied renunciation. And then we had some discussions about the role of sannyas as both traditional, as we were discussing, it establishes a platform for a respected platform to communicate a message to the public. So this is the traditional authority, but also the charismatic authority. Sannyasis, many times, are personalities who have a charisma and they develop their own ways of expressing the message of the Sampradaya. So, in one way, it will be like in the academic world, doctors, the PhD, His Holiness Vidyananda Maharaj, will compare sometimes the accepting sannyas in the times of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for example, to a PhD in the present context. People, if someone is a PhD, okay, we want to listen what he or she has to say. So a sannyasi also has that, there is the traditional acceptance for having the title, but also because has done, or is supposed to, if he has done the homework, then there will be certain charisma, or there may be, in some cases, special charisma, which will contribute in an original way to the Sampradaya. Of course, we will discuss this today or tomorrow. This sometimes creates tensions within the institution. When a sannyasi is, quote, too charismatic, the institution may say, okay, stop it. That has happened. We have cases in our movement where sannyasis experience tensions because of this. Some left, I don't say all who left was because of that, but that could be the case. In some cases, they wanted to express something which was beyond the constraints or the rules of the institution, and they decided, okay, I will do it on my own way. I'm not supporting that nor condemning fear. I'm just explaining the facts, things that happen sometimes. And then also there are certain factors which contribute to the success or failure in the sannyasashram, and which can be extended also, we discussed yesterday, onto the practice of Krishna consciousness of any devotee in whatever ashram or situation. Because as Srila Prabhupada said, anyone who performs his duty for the service of the Lord without being attached to the fruits of action is considered a sannyasi and a yogi. And we chanted the verse from Bhagavad Gita on that. And this was about the methodology. I will not explain again, but this, we look into the, it was a qualitative research with different interviews, participant observation, and then textual sources, both primary and secondary. These were the numbers of interviews conducted. And this is where we are now, and we will read this verse. Yagya dana tapa karma. Natyajyam karyameva tat. Yagyodanam tapaschaiva. Pavanani manishinam. Srila Prabhupada's translation and purport: acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. One paragraph purport. Although there are differences of opinion about renunciation, in different schools there are differences of opinion. Here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, gives his judgment, which should be taken as final. After all, the Vedas are different laws given by the Lord. Oh, sorry. Anyway, that's okay. I'm reading the previous purport, but it's fine. It must be Krishna's arrangement. Here the Lord is personally present, and his words should be taken as final. The Lord says that the process of renunciation should be considered in terms of the modes of material nature in which is performed. And then the next purport to the verse we just read. The yogis should perform acts for the advancement of human society. There are many purificatory processes for advancing a human being to a spiritual life. The marriage ceremony, for example, is considered to be one of these sacrifices. It is called Vivaha Yagya. Should a sannyasi who is in the renounced order of life and who has given up his family relations encourage the marriage ceremony? The Lord says here that any sacrifice which is meant for human welfare should never be given up. Vivaha Yagya, the marriage ceremony, is meant to regulate the human mind so that it may become peaceful for spiritual advancement. For most men, this Vivaha Yagya should be encouraged even by persons in the renounced order of life. There is more, but okay, this was the point Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, indicating how he did things that other sadhus in India may criticize. Why a sannyasi is getting involved in these things? Especially in the beginning, he had to train his disciples who were not acquainted at all with Vedic culture, and therefore he was more involved. Later was a little bit less involved, but still he was practically involved until the end. Okay, let's move into sannyasi in classical times. Just 1 second that I get my notes. So there are different opinions among scholars about how the traditions of renunciation have developed in India. Some say that originally they were coming from what they call the Shramana traditions, that is from renouncers as ascetics who did not follow the Veda. Some scholars think like that and later on evolve into the ashram system. Other scholars say no, and we will agree as practitioners, we will agree with this second group of scholars, that actually it developed from the Vedas, and these two traditions, Vedic tradition of renouncers and Shramana traditions, they coexisted, not necessarily one evolved from the other. We will not get into details of that, but this is just to put it into context. These are the five characteristics which can summarize the practice of sannyas in classical times, as we find it in the text, in textual tradition. We cannot analyze popular practice in those years unless you have mystic power and are able to go there like the time machine. They make some films on that. So if someone will be able to enter, maybe you could go and do some interviews. Then, of course, you will have to learn perhaps Sanskrit or Tamil and whatever languages they were speaking at the time. So it will be difficult. So it's difficult to see exactly how it was. We see what's in Shastra, in the text. And we take it, okay, this is how it was. But many times we don't really know. We have a window of how it was, but do we really know? Sometimes we talk the Vedic times was like that, but we have a window, the window of Shastra, and we can see through that window, but that's what we have. How our mind interprets that may vary in each case. So, anyway, but what we see, these are general characteristics. This I got from Patrick Olivelle, a scholar who has studied textual traditions in renunciation. So we see that there is a social ties are cut by the renouncer. Generally, he will go to the forest. Generally, renouncers will live an itinerant life, moving from place to place. Yesterday, some of you mentioned no more than 3 days in one place. Or we say even for the Goswamis, even in the late medieval period, one night under a particular tree, moving from tree to tree. To the why that? To avoid becoming attached to a tree. So, itinerant life, and then there was a vow, what in the Christian language we will call vow of poverty, no possessions. There were even a list in the Dharma Shastras of the few possessions a sannyasi will be allowed to take, like the loincloth. There are different lists. In some cases, not even cloth. And we read it, we heard 2 days ago or 3 days ago in the Bhagavatam verse, Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu gave the class. There was some comment on that. Sometimes naked, sometimes, okay, you can have a coping, a piece of cloth to cover. Maybe a lota, kamandalu, and danda in some cases. A filter to filter the water, to avoid, this was for the principles of Ahimsa, not killing insects, because they will go to places to drink water from the river, very clean river. Nowadays will be very difficult to do that in most places on this planet. But they will take with a filter, they will filter the water, so they will not kill the insects which were there. And perhaps there are some lists in different Upanishads like that. And especially food, that was very strict. Eating, not eating full meals from one place, only in very extreme circumstances. And we will read now some verses on that. And then another element was abandoning ritual activities, yagyas, anything connected to fire. Yesterday we discussed a little bit that. Fire and action. And of course, celibacy was, lifelong celibacy was a must, a very important principle. Let's read some quotes on that. Manu Samhita states, let him go to beg once a day. Let him not be eager to obtain a large quantity of alms. When no smoke ascends from the kitchen, when the pestle lies motionless, when the embers have been extinguished, when the people have finished their meal, when the remnants in the dishes have been removed, let the ascetic always go to bed. So don't go to bed to the time when people are eating and they will be willing to give. Naturally, they will share, especially in Vedic culture. But go when everything is finished. If there is something left, then you get something. Let him accept so much only as will sustain life. Let him not care about the quality of his utensils by eating little and by standing and sitting in solitude. Let him restrain his senses if they are attracted by sensual objects. So it was not assumed the ascetic was not necessarily considered a Paramahamsa. In some cases will be, those very advanced, but in some cases they will have to deal with the urges of the senses. And here are some indications, some instructions are given about how to do that. By the restraint of his senses, by the destruction of love and hatred, and by the abstention from injuring creatures, he becomes fit for immortality. Ahimsa is a very important principle for sannyasis, non-violence. Then Srimad Bhagavatam, 11.18.18. Rejecting those houses that are polluted and untouchable, would be for eating meat, for example, one should approach without previous calculation seven houses and be satisfied with that which is obtained there by begging. According to necessity, one may approach each of the four occupational orders of life. So will be seven houses, whatever is given, this is Krishna's mercy. And not possible to accept one full meal. Madhukari. Madhukari is the way of doing of the honeybee, collecting little bit from each flower. In this case, seven flowers. And if there is no honey in the flower, I mean no pollen, okay, next day. So it was, we can see it was very, very strict, very, very difficult for most of us. I don't think I will be able to do that, I confess, honestly. That's all. So, then, some other quotes. From the Upanishads, for example, on celibacy. Let him neither converse with any woman, nor call to mind one he has previously seen. Let him avoid talking about women, and not even look at a picture of one. An ascetic's mind is inevitably perturbed if he behaves with women foolishly in these four ways. When his mind is perturbed, he will perish. From the Narada Parivrajaka Upanishad. Comments or questions on these five principles of renunciation found in classical times in Shastra, which is actually the foundation, these principles are the foundation for the more recent expressions of renunciation, even if externally expressed in different ways. Mendicant. English is not my first language, so I know in for example, in Spanish, mendicant is related to beggar. Mendigo, one mendigo, it's a beggar. So and we have in Bhagavatam, in the Uddhava Gita, we find the Bhikshu Gita. The Bhikshu Gita is, Bhikshu means beggar. And sometimes some sannyasis, they sign Tridandi Bhikshu, the beggar, Tridandi meaning Vaishnava, beggar. So this title is used sometimes, Bhikshu. The title Bhikshu, I have seen even Buddhists, some Buddhist monks, they use the term Bhikkhu. Bhikkhu is Bhikshu, beggar. So this is something interesting also with the title Swami. We use the title Swami, it's a title very, Swami means master. But the title is beggar actually. But it's used, Swami, for preaching purpose, it is used the title Swami. Otherwise, the title is not, it's actually harmful for spiritual life, especially for Vaishnavas. The quality of a Vaishnava should be, the essential quality of a Vaishnava should be, or is, humility. But if someone has a big title, how can he remain humble? It's a paradox how you do that. It's actually a challenge, can be a problem, can be one of the reasons, and we will see this is one of the factors for fall down. But for preaching, the title is used, and we're there to sign like that, because the title is respected. Like doctor, you are doctor, doctor such and such. So it's a bit different, but it has the same connotations. This is a picture, no one, I mean, I chose that picture because it's actually a bit interesting. Could be, it's a mixture, I think it's a mixture of the classical sadhus, classical sannyasis from, we could imagine some of the classical sannyasis from the Upanishads, but they have some instruments and they seem to be a bit in, like a little a community, so a bit more modern, and there is a picture, isn't it, which indicates modernity there. Then, sannyasi medieval times. Sannyasi medieval times is very much connected to the mat system, the system of an ashram, and where the leader of the sect in the good sense of the term, not in the pejorative modern usage. So the leader of the mat will be a sannyasi, and will have sannyasi disciples, other monks, but also became guru for other people who were not sannyasis. And we have, there are different traditional Vedantacharyas, and all of them were sannyasis. Prior to Shankaracharya, this will be before the medieval time, but I have classified him there because he's the first Vedantacharya. Of course, the commentaries are not there, so it is, there are references about Vishnu Swami, but his Vedanta Sutta commentary is not there. There are some commentators after him in his line. If I remember well, I believe Bhaskara was connected to the Vishnu Swami line. Yeah, I remember having read that. So this is prior. So according to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Vishnu Swami Acharya, he had 700 sannyasi disciples. So he used sannyas to preach his Vaishnava message. Then Sri Shankaracharya, actually he established, or he is credited for having established, some scholars say that actually the Dashanami line of sannyasis was actually developed later on. This is there are different opinions on that. But the sannyasis in the Shankara line are known as dashanamis. They have 10 names, and they live in different parts of India. There are four main places where monasteries were established, and then different names of sannyasis are connected to particular places. Badarikashram, Puri, Sringeri, and Rameshwaram, I think. Is that? No. Dwarka, thank you. So, the different names are there, like Sarasvati, Tirtha, Puri, Bharati. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas from Adashanami, Keshava Bharati. So we have some in our Sampradaya, even though we completely disagree with the Siddhanta in terms of understanding Param Tattva, that truth. Referring particularly to the absolute truth. Nevertheless, there are connections there. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas in that line for a particular purpose. Then Ramanujacharya, he propounded the philosophy of qualified monism, which is that Advaita. Srimadvacharya, Dvaita Vada, dualism, we see Madhva like that. Ishvara and Jiva, no unity. He didn't agree with Ramanujacharya. He didn't like, he thought Ramanujacharya was too soft. too soft. And then Nimbarkacharya. Nimbarkacharya, this is what the data given by scholars, but if we go to the followers of the Sampradaya, they say that he lived 5,000 years ago. So they will not say he's medieval. But anyway, sometimes he's classified there, so I have used here the chronology given by scholars. Shankaracharya, according to Srila Prabhupada, Shankaracharya, quoting Shastra, quoting the Puranas, Shankaracharya is an incarnation of Lord Shiva, and he was requested to preach monism. And then the four Vaishnavacharyas, we should all remember, we are Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati in his temple, in his headquarters of the Gaudiya Math, presently Chaitanya Math in Navadvip, he established murtis of the four Vaishnavacharyas, offering respect and worshipping their contribution to the world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sannyas was actually basically written in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat, how it was purely was mainly, of course there are external reasons and internal reasons are explained for accepting sannyas. The external reasons will be preaching strategy in order to have a platform to reach to a large audience, and particularly the leaders of society, intellectuals, leaders of, even though he didn't directly associate with the leaders of the government, but he got royal patronage by being a sannyasi. not just by being a sannyasi, but certainly that contributed. For example, in the case of Maharaj Prataparudra in Orissa. Okay, I'm wondering how much we should get into explaining, into discussing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sannyas. I say because of time. I'm not sure if something that will be mentioned will stop us from other parts of the section. What do you think? What do you prefer? One will be to spend a little more time on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sannyas and the reasons. If they are not understood, why did he take sannyasi from Adashanami, from a monist? Or that's known, because the Adashanamis were very prestigious, so he took sannyas from them. He could have gone to South India and searched for a Ramanuja sannyas. There is evidence that they existed, but he didn't do that. He was practical. We could say, was it practical that Keshava Bharati was just passing by there, or was a deliberate action? Of course, we can say Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is God, so he made the arrangement so that the sannyasi who passed by there was Adashanami. Any thoughts, comments, questions on that? Can you please speak louder? He wanted to create a bridge, you mean? In one way, we could say he was able to reach out to Prakashananda Sarasvati by being one of them. He was one of them. He was a Dashanami. So they didn't agree that he was singing, doing public Sankirtan, and they were questioning, how is it that one of us is doing something we don't do? We study Vedanta, but we do not publicly sing. So he was able to influence them with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Also, he used to teach Dashanami Sannyasis. He used to teach Vedanta, so he also converted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Yeah, I think I will agree with your point. If somebody else wants to give other perspectives, you are welcome on that point. Well, there is evidence that they exist. In the Ramanuja Sampradaya, there is a book, Yati Dharma Samuchaya, written by Yadava Prakash, and there are rules for Vaishnava Sannyasis. But we assume it was for preaching. Otherwise, why he would accept from a monist? I mean, here I'm expressing my opinion why he would accept, if there were Vaishnava sannyasis, why he didn't take from them? why he took from an impersonalist. So that will be an explanation. It was just practical. A Dashanami passed by, so that was practical. He didn't have to go to South India. It was a time to do it. You have the product, take it. Another is okay, it's for preaching. Well, Vaishnavas, Ramanujas and Madhvas, they were orthodox in terms of Brahmanical practices. They were not as strict as the monist, but they were, according to a script, to textual traditions, they were orthodox. Even nowadays, we heard from Kripamoya Prabhu when he was here, he mentioned that there was a big scandal because one of the Ramanuja sannyasis came to the West and he took a bath using a bucket. And that was like a fall down for the sannyasi. He used a bucket. He traveled to the West and there to use a bucket because they are supposed to take bath entering into a lake or a river. So how did he dare to take a bucket? So we can see they are really orthodox. If they are orthodox now, you can imagine how they were at the time. At least the same, I will say. Of course, we cannot say 100% for sure, but we see what's written on the text, what they are practicing now. No, he took sannyasi in Katva. Katva is 18, like it's like one to two hours drive from Navadvip in present roads. So it's like 80-100 kilometers approximately. He left walking from Navadvip to the place where Keshava Bharati was staying. And he took sannyas there. There is an elaborate description in Chaitanya Bhagavat, if you are interested in reading it. It's very beautiful, actually. Lord Chaitanya, prior to that, he actually approached to his mother, approached the devotees, so he didn't do it abruptly, but he did it in a very soft way, which indicates also the Lord Chaitanya's sannyas was a more, we could say, softer sannyas compared to previous expressions of medieval sannyas. This is the verse from the Bhikshu Gita, which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sang when he took sannyas, and Srila Prabhupada will also lecture on this verse on sannyas initiation ceremonies. We can sing it once. Etam sastaya paratmanishtam adyasitam purvatamair maharshibhi aham tarishyami durantaparam tamo mukundangri nishevayaiva. Anyone likes to read aloud, please? No, not the Sanskrit, the translation. Thank you. So Sannyas, Vaishnava Sannyas is connected to service to Mukunda, surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord, and that is serving devotees of the Lord. The devotees of the Lord, they are situated at the lotus feet of the Lord. So there is that connection. By serving the devotees, by serving the lotus feet of the Lord, it is possible to cross over the unsurmountable ocean of ignorance. And then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in that mood, when he took sannyas, he went to Vrindavan, and his whole absorption was he sang different songs we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, expressing that he wanted that his mind becomes Vrindavan. The pastimes of the Lord are constantly in the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then we see how in Jagannath Puri he manifested all the transcendental symptoms of divine ecstasy to the greatest extent. And this will be connected to the internal reasons of acceptance of sannyas by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There are some writings in our Sampradaya about this, how he wanted to, the saffron color is the color of separation, which was used by Srimati Radharani when she was feeling separation from Krishna, when Krishna hides from her. Then there are some characteristics of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sannyas. It was sweeter and softer. And these are some of the elements. He will do things that normally other sannyasis. Before we saw the five principles of sannyas in classical times, during the medieval period, for example, this book, Yati Dharma Samuchaya, by Yadava Prakash, Ramanujacharya's disciple, who was his prior Mayavadi guru, but then he became his disciple and was ordained a sannyasi by him, he compiled, based on the Dharma Shastras, a set of rules for medieval Vaishnava sannyasis. Many of the rules were the same, but there were some, he says, when there are no rules written, then we should follow whatever is, whatever brahmanas follow, householder brahmanas, which indicates this element of domestication, how they were much more connected to society. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for example, the not eating a full meal, that was followed also by medieval sannyasis. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he did eat full meals, for example, in the houses of Brahmana Vaishnavas, devotees who will chant 100,000 names, even if they were coming from Shudra families. Shudra Mahajana is a term used in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Great souls from Shudra families. He was not itinerant for 18 years. He was in Jagannath Puri. He was not moving. He was living in the house of Kashi Mishra. Of course, the Gambira room is very small. When we go and visit the place where they say the Gambira is, some say that there was another room, another tunnel, where the Gambira, the real Gambira, is found. So it was like a cave. But even that room is not luxury. It's a very small, very austere room. But still he was living in a house of the devotees. He was very strict in terms of following the rules of celibacy and avoiding asat sangha. The banishment of Jota Haridas is an intense story, in that there seems to be that Jota Haridas didn't do much. We could say, I mean, he did, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, didn't seem that he did big things. There is no description of a gross fall down, nor even a verbal fall down. The description is not given. Only that Lord Chaitanya asked, he went to eat to the house of one devotee, Bhagavan Acharya, and he asked, when he was eating the rice, where is this rice coming from? And then Bhagavan Acharya said, Jota Haridas brought it from the house of Madhavi Devi. And then he said, from now on, I don't want to see Jota Haridas anymore. For 1 year, even though the devotees were pleading to him, please, what he has done, so serious, it's a minor offense, whatever. It doesn't seem to be, it was not a scandal, but he was, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't relent. And after that, Jota Haridas was so mortified, he committed suicide. And Lord Chaitanya said, it's fine. It's a proper punishment for someone who violates the rules of sannyas. Basically, what we find in scripture is this. Of course, it's not clear if Lord Chaitanya punishes him because Madhavi Devi, he interacted with Madhavi Devi, because actually she was a senior mother, very respected. She was one of the intimate associates of Lord Chaitanya. Srila Prabhupada talks about looking with lust to a young woman. That was not Madhavi Devi. Some devotees interpret in the Sampradaya that was as a maidservant who was there in the house. But I didn't find clear evidence of what it was. So we don't exactly know what was in the mind of Lord Chaitanya. Did he talk to that lady? Maybe he talked. Did he just think? Did he just look? What did he do? What happened? We don't know. But it was not a social scandal. It is not mentioned as such in any of the texts that describe the incident. So he was very strict. He wanted to teach a lesson. There are a list of lessons about given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and quoted by Prabhupada about this lila of Lord Chaitanya. Of course, Chaitanya Charitamrita mentions that he accepted Jota Haridas as a Gandharva when he quit his body. He came to sing for him, and that's described. And Lord Chaitanya was pleased with him. He was very strict. He didn't want to mix with King Prataparudra because he was a king. So, was just because he was related to money and women. And he expressed deep gratitude to his servant, Govinda, when Lord Chaitanya in ecstasy was running to the temple of Lord Jagannath, when a Devadasi was doing a bhajan for the Lord. Gita Govinda, was the temple of Jagannath or Tota Gopinath temple, one of the two. Lord Chaitanya was running in ecstasy. He wanted to embrace the singer. He was so pleased. He was running. Govinda was running after him. Lord Chaitanya passed through, there were thorns, some plants with thorns. He didn't even notice. He was so much in ecstasy. And Govinda was running like mad. This is going to be a scandal. Running. When he was reaching the place, the temple where the Devadasi was singing, Govinda called the Lord and said, "My Lord, a woman is singing." And then Lord Chaitanya expressed deep gratitude that actually you have saved my life. I would have died if this by doing that. So that this is the way how Lord Chaitanya was living his life of celibacy. It means the rule, when he said I would have died, is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, what he meant, what he would have done. Committed suicide for violating the rules of sannyas, or his reputation would have died, depending. Okay, quickly. Okay, wow, not much time, sorry. Very quickly, and then, okay, no, let's take questions, and then tomorrow we continue with the rest. We will need one more day in order to cover everything. Yes, that's a good point. He's God, so he was playing both roles as a role model, but also he's God, so we cannot imitate him. Then later on, something in the Sampradaya, something interesting and relevant to us, is that the disciples of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not take sannyas. So he didn't establish a tradition of sannyasis as he had done. Their sannyas was more informal and a tradition of what it is called Vesha initiation was established after Lord Chaitanya. It is not clear who started it. Some say that was the son of Nityananda Prabhu Virabhadra, who started it. So there are different ideas. It's not completely clear. That also, it seems some Gaudiya Vaishnava leaders say, for example, Sridhar Maharaj, the Prabhupada's god brother, says that Lord Chaitanya must have given consent because Sanatana Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami, they dress like that. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were dressing white cloth, but they didn't take the red cloth or the saffron cloth. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is mentioned they did not accept Rakta Vastra. This is a verse from spoken by by Sanatana Goswami. Anyone likes to read it loudly, the translation? The context is Jagadananda Pandit, a confidential associate of Lord Chaitanya, was sent by Lord Chaitanya to Vrindavan to visit Sanatana Goswami. They were living together. Jagadananda Pandit will go for cook to different houses and he will cook. And Sanatana Goswami will stay in his Bhajan Kutir. So Sanatana Goswami had a cloth, red cloth, around his head, and this had been given by a Dashanami named Mukunda Sarasvati. But Jagadananda Pandit imagined that this was Lord Chaitanya's cloth. So he was in ecstasy when he saw the cloth. He thought this is, he was ecstatic, he was wearing. Lord Chaitanya must have given Sanatana Goswami this red cloth. But when he found out that it belonged to Mukunda Sarasvati, Jagannanda Pandit took a pot, he wanted to beat Sanatana Goswami, literally. Then, of course, they talk and calm down. Because he said, how do you dare to not being loyal to the to our master? There was the element of loyalty to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then, the could be, it is not mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but the idea that belonged to Adashanami. So then Sanatana Goswami replied this. He told Jagadananda Pandit, you are right. This saffron cloth is unfit for a Vaishnava to wear. And Vaishnavas didn't use saffron cloth from Lord Chaitanya until, I mean Gaudiya Vaishnavas, until Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur reestablished it for the preaching purpose. This is an analysis made by Mams Bro, initiated, Bhrigupad Prabhu initiated in Gaudiya Vaishnava, initiated. He's not an ISKCON member presently. It's an analysis that reflects the different branches within the Chaitanya Sampradaya, the family lineages, the caste Goswamis in Vrindavan and Navadvip. There are different lines. The Parivaras, the cyclic succession lines, mainly Babaji's, Mataji's, they follow the Vesha initiation. Gaur Kishora Das Babaji Maharaj and so the Babaji's in our lines, they had Diksha. The Diksha connection was connected to those lines, but then we have Siksha connection to them. And then modern groups such as Gaudiya Math and ISKCON, which is a modern expression. Modern doesn't mean it's less valuable. It means it's modern. It's a reform. Why took place the reform? Because the other two groups were not doing their, according to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, were not doing the job properly. Therefore, there was a need for a reform movement. Today is Srila Gaurakishora Das Babaji disappearance day. So we thought, okay, he's an example, a great example of Vesha initiation. Well, the reasons for the reform. Yes, during the last 150 years, there was a big degradation within the line of Babaji's. The Babaji's were mixing with Mataji's, who also will receive initiation, Babaji initiation. Babaji, respected father, Mataji, respected mother. They will mix and they will have children. Their issues are known as Jati Vaishnavas. Or I think the Jati Goshais, I suppose the Jati Goshais are the same. It's a class of Vaishnavas in Bengal born from Babaji's and Mataji's. So it was big degradation. Morally was very highly misrepresenting the Sampradaya. So yes, you could say it was worse, you could say, but of course in commiserating, I don't know the English expression, in Spanish we will say, the literal translation is, when a problem is a problem of many, it's consolation for the fools. Like, you know what I mean? If I say, okay, they were doing very bad, we are doing bad, but they are doing worse, or they are also doing bad, will be not a good consolation. We need to do good. That. What's the English expression for that? Is there any saying? Okay, we will stop here. It's time for Artic. Tomorrow we will continue, and day after tomorrow also, because otherwise we will not do justice to the topic. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Krishna Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.